How did you know, Bob, that your baseball career was over?
Well, in 1956, I was down playing in the Southern Association, and in the middle of the year, and our daughter was rather ill at the particular time, and my wife wouldn't come down there, and I just kind of got disgusted. Things weren't going very well, so I says, the heck with baseball. And just overnight, I give it up completely. I didn't call my wife or thing, saying I was coming home. I just got on a plane and flew home, and I called it quits then.
The adjustment from, this should be fairly easy then, the adjustment then from playing baseball to just going back into, let's say, a more civilian life, then probably wasn't that difficult for you, based on your frame of mind.
It was kind of rough at first, although I did keep kind of busy, because at that particular time I was working at the Cleveland Stadium in the ticket office for the Indians, and then in the wintertime I was working in the ticket office with the Browns, so I kept my hand in sports a little bit, but I stayed out of everything for a little bit, and then I started in with Kraft Foods as a institutional sales. And I did that for 15 years, so it kind of got my mind away from baseball completely. But all that time, too, I was still had my hand in the ticket department down there at the stadium.
When spring rolled around, did you get that itch?
For the first year or two, I kind of says, well, it's time to get ready for spring training again, but I soon got over it.
You had no, never felt like coaching or doing any managing in the professional ranks?
No, I didn't. I didn't feel that I wanted to get into that part of it.
All the places that you played, talking about ballparks now, did you have a favorite place that you played?
I always liked Detroit. I always felt that the fans were good. The stadium, I like the old stadiums. There's one thing I just don't like about baseball today, and that's the artificial turf, because it just does not go for good baseball, I feel.
How about, Sportsman's Park, when you played, of course you had the Cardinals and the Browns playing there. It seems like every day somebody was on that field. That had to be, and then of course in the St. Louis summers, 100 degrees, that field had to be in pretty miserable shape.
It was in pretty bad shape, but still it was passable for Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. Ground was a little on the hard side, but it passed.
And Comiskey Park, pitcher's park there?
I liked Comiskey Park too. That was a good pitcher's park, but still, I would like to go back over my record and find out. I think I had more home runs hit in Chicago than I did in Detroit.
How about, did you have a least favorite place, some place that you absolutely dreaded to go to, either for what was going to happen or?
I don't know. It seemed like I never liked going into Washington. Every time we went in there, it seemed like I was coming down with a severe summer cold or something was going on, it seemed like. So I always thought that I didn't care about Washington.
When you played, who would you consider to be the best umpire that you ran into?
Well, at that time, we had a lot of good umpires, I feel. We had, naturally, Ed Hurley, Bill Summers. We had a lot of good umpires, and Art Passarella, Paparella, and I feel that we had overall John Stevens. We had overall, I think we had a real good group of umpires.
But nobody sticks out. Did you have a favorite or a least favorite?
No, there wasn't anybody other than I can remember my first year in the major leagues, McGowan. Was umpiring a game that I had pitched, and I questioned a few of his calls at that particular time. Well, I ran into McGowan later that evening, and I can always remember to this day that he says that I was just a fresh little kid, and he says the best thing that you can do is not start a stink with the umpires because they will hold it against you. Mm. And I've always remembered that. So I never did argue too much with any of the umpires, and I always thought that we got a pretty fair shake from them.
He had a couple of run-ins with the Browns in 52, didn't he? I guess right after Marty Marion took over, didn't Marty Marion and him get in a little shoving match or something, and they suspended Marty?
That I don't remember. I really don't remember that happening.
And I thought maybe also the same year, from when I was doing research for this, that he also did something with the St. Louis Riders, made an obscene gesture or something, or did something, and then McGowan himself was suspended because of that. Don't remember anything?
I don't remember that.
How about, did you ever get thrown out of a game?
No, I never did. Matter of fact, I think all the hitters felt that I didn't throw hard enough to hurt them if I hit them. But back then, we could throw close to a hitter without saying that we're deliberately throwing at them or anything. And they knew when you got two strikes on them, they knew that they were going to get brushed back. And it isn't like it is today, that if you happen to throw a little inside pitch that they think you're throwing at them, why... The players back then didn't think it that way.
So we had Sabre had a convention in St. Louis in 1992, and they had a St. Louis Browns panel, and Jim Delsing was there, and I think Don Lenhart was there, and a few other guys, and one of them, it might have been Delsing, said that the Browns were so bad, he said that when they were, somebody threw at them when they were brushed back, that they considered it to be a compliment.
That's right.
I got a kick out of that. Any of you remember any memorable fights?
Oh, we had several of them with Clint Courtney. He was the quite the scrappy one, and he would be getting into fights any time that he possibly had a chance. He had them. He has a few fights with Billy Martin at that time back then. And overall, there wasn't too many of them.
There was no bad blood between any of the teams that you played for? For example, like, I guess in the 30s, the Cardinals with Dizzy Dean, they had some beanball wars going with the Giants and maybe with another
no,
team.
I don't think we ever had any of that.
Something like that. How about when you were traveling? Did you start off on, was it all trains, or did you commence to some flying? Or?
We did all train. Traveling at that particular time, and we'd be in the club cars playing hearts or something, going from town to town, and it made it a pretty long season going that way too.
But it also made the team now you have 25 guys going in 25 different directions. It made the
that's right more you do have team. We were closer knit at that particular time. The players would help each other more or less than everybody being on their own.
How much time, not during the regular season, but how much time did your wife go with you down to spring training? Or?
Yes, my wife always went with me in spring training.
And then
would stay there during the course of the spring training, and then when spring training would break, I would go back to where we were going to play.
Mm-hmm. So you always stayed in, the family was wherever you happened to be?
Yes.
What did you think about being away so much traveling, you know, half the time you were, was it tough on you, or did you enjoy the different cities? Or?
Well, it wasn't that bad. You did miss being away from your family, but we all felt that that was part of baseball. You had to be half and half away from, because you played half your games on the road, so we knew that just so the trips weren't a two-week stay. Those were the long trips. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, the other trips, they weren't that bad.
Was there really a difference between the upper berths and the lower berths in the train?
I never thought there was that much difference. Maybe other than on the upper berth that you would sway a little more.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm reading about it that the lower berths, I guess, were saved for the more established players, and the upper berths went to the rookies. Was there something, some device there that they would tell the rookie players, you're supposed to, the pitchers, maybe you're supposed to rest your arm in? I keep reading about some contraption that was off the top bunk, and they said, well, that's to rest your arm in while you're in, and it would work.
I don't remember anything like that.
Practical joke or something.
I don't.
I've been on a train one time, Amtrak. We enjoyed it, but certainly not like train travel was 40 years ago. Who did you room with when you were playing?
Well, I had Dick Krihosky for a couple of years. And then I had a kid in Chicago, Jack Bruner. And let's see, who else? Because I had Krihosky at two different places in Chicago. I mean, Detroit and St. Louis.
And he was first baseman?
First baseman.
They didn't put pitchers with pitchers or pitchers with catchers?
No. No, they split you up. I had Joe Ginsburg, a catcher, with us.
Mm-hmm.
He was with us in Detroit. He and I were roommates for quite a while. But outside of that, those were about the only ones that...
Do you have any good curfew stories or any good roommate stories?
Well, other than we had a deal in Philadelphia with the St. Louis Browns, and we were going so bad that Bill Veeck told us that if he caught any of the ball players in the hotel that night, they were going to be fined. So he says, everybody go out on the town and stay out all night. Well, that's what happened. And actually, after that happened, we did end up winning a ball game or so.
Was there some point during the 53 season that Marty Marion had Milt Richmond pick out the lineup?
It could have been, because Milt is a diehard St. Louis Browns fan.
Mm-hmm. I think reading about that, I guess they were going bad, and Marion said to him, well, maybe you can do better. You pick out a lineup. You know the players. And he refused to do it, and Marty Marion kept on him, and he did. And the Browns won that game. I guess they broke some sort of losing streak or something. But it's kind of interesting. How was the equipment that you played with different from what they... the bats have got to be pretty much the same, and the balls vary from year to year, but... As far as gloves and uniforms and...
Well, the gloves are much bigger today. And then another thing, the batting helmets, which we didn't have then. Those would be the only two differences that I could see.
Did they have the inserts back then or no? Or was it just guys up there wearing cloth caps?
Just the cloth caps is all we had at that particular time.
Back when you played, they left the gloves on the field.
Left them out on the field, and I think they changed that in 53 or 54. Around in there, they started bringing the gloves in.
Mm-hmm. What was the particular reason, first of all, for leaving them out there, and second of all, for changing their mind? Do you remember?
Well, leaving them out there would be very simple, that the players wouldn't have to go back into the dugout if they were the last batter or something, or were on base. And then it got to the point where a ground ball or a line drive could hit one of the gloves. And I think that was the reason that was changed, that they take their gloves off of the field.
Playing in St. Louis in the summertime in those uniforms, I think your wife mentioned that you used to lose 10 or 12 pounds when you pitched.
Yes, you would lose a lot of weight. And dehydrate very badly, because I can remember one game that Gene Bearden was pitching, and he ended up on base and ran, I don't know whether it was another base hit or he ended up on third base, and as he got to third base, he started going down, and Hank Sora was the umpire at that particular time, and Hank reached over with one hand and held Bearden up. He was ready to pass out on third base there. It was so hot. But I always thought that Washington was as hot or hotter than St. Louis.
And what was the, was it just drink a lot of water and...
salt water, salt tablets and water.
In St. Louis, water. Was it drink a lot of Falstaff?
Yes, Falstaff gave every player a case of beer a week, whether we were home or on the road at that particular time. Because they were the sponsors of the Browns.
When you first signed back in 40, 42 or 43?
43.
What was your signing bonus?
My signing bonus was getting a AAA contract,
mm-hmm.
which amounted to all of, what was it at that time, $100 or $150 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about what it amounted to.
And I know we talked about at the end of the 51 season, Detroit was offering you $10,000 and you wanted more than that. What did you wind up signing for when you went with St. Louis in 52?
I got up to 25.
And that was the most you made?
Yes.
And that at that time was pretty
big
money.
Mm-hmm.
How about they were handing out meal money at that time? What kind of money were you getting there?
We got up, we finally ended up getting up to $7 a day. And that was, that would survive us. It made us, we were able to take care of our extra bills, the meal money and everything. It isn't anything like today.
Yeah. Did you ever, other than the little disagreement you had with the Briggs family, did you ever have an incident anywhere along the line where one of the deals where, Bob, well, if you pitch well this year, then we don't have the money right now, but we'll take care of you the following year, and then the following year the money never showed up?
Never had anything like that, no.
Yeah. What kind of, did you work in the off season when you were playing ball?
Yes, I was working in the Cleveland Indians ticket office, and also with the Cleveland Browns.
Okay, that was
during the off season, because in after we got married in 51, I had to get permission from the Detroit Ball Club, Charlie Gehringer.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get permission from them in order to work for the Cleveland Indians, which he wrote a letter and gave permission for me to work there.
What kind of guy was he?
He was very good to his players. He was rough, but he was good.
He was the general manager there?
He was general manager.
How about, so that's the work that you did. You just worked in the ticket office?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Were you superstitious at all?
No.
Not at all.
It didn't bother me.
No? Stepped on the line?
Whether you stepped, if the step came when the line was there, I stepped on it.
Did you play with anybody that was overly superstitious?
I, no one particular, but I have noticed a lot of the players, they will skip or do something just so they don't step on the line or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, I don't remember anybody being overly superstitious.
Was there any particular reason that you wore the numbers that you wore, or did they just throw the uniform at you and that's the number that you got?
I just wore the number they give us.
Never had no choice.
I
know, it seems like a guy will make sure. I guess when Barry Bonds went over to San Francisco, for example, he wanted Willie Mays' number.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, they most of the players, I think, used the number that was given to them, and that was it.
In the early 50s, were they trying to get a union together, Allie Reynolds and...
Allie Reynolds, Bob Feller, Early Wynn.
Did you have anything to do with that? Or?
Well, I was... I considered myself in on the starting of the pension deal. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it was quite an argument that the players wanted to get in on a pension or get a pension plan started. And back at that time, the players had to put in a certain amount and the owners had to put in a certain amount, which today the players don't put anything in. Well, as a matter of fact, since what, 1967 or something like that, that the players don't even put anything in the program anymore.
Do you, this is the first time in 19 interviews I've asked this question, so we'll see how it goes. Do you have like an all-time all-star team, including a manager? Do you have a favorite guy in each position?
I really couldn't sit down and name a all-star team right now offhand. I'd want Ted Williams, I'd want Joe DiMaggio, and as strange as, excuse me, as strange as it may seem, I'd either want Roy Campanella or Yogi Berra as the catcher.
Well,
either one
strange.
Of those two. But I'd like to have Mantle in the outfield along with Williams and DiMaggio, which would make a fair outfield.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, I couldn't come right out right now and without getting all their names and in front of me. I'd like to see Brooks Robinson at third base naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, I don't know.
How about a manager? Do you have a favorite manager?
Well, I had a couple that I always liked. Well, he wasn't the manager. Well, he did manage me in the minor leagues, and that was Ted Lyons.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was a coach also at Chicago. And I always liked Happy Jack Onslow. For some reason or the other, I got along very well with him.
You were just a young guy coming up, and he treated you real good, huh?
Yes, I got along good with him.
We talked a little bit about it. You mentioned artificial turf, but how do you think the game is different today from when you played?
Well, I think the turf has an awful lot to do with it, with the way the game is being played today. Another thing I don't like in today's game, that the pitchers don't bat. That has changed the whole outlook of baseball and the way that the manager can use his players and the way the game is being played. I liked it the old way, that let the pitchers hit and have a little strategy in with the game as it goes along.
Do you begrudge anybody for the money that they're making today?
I don't begrudge the players one bit, for the simple reason that to this day I feel that it's the owner's fault that has gotten to the point that it has, because we can go back to Charlie Finley and Steinbrenner that goes out and tries to buy a pennant, which they do buy a pennant. They're the ones that caused all this money going up the way it is. So I don't blame the players. Their life, their playing career is so short that they've got to make the money while they can.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't blame the players. I blame strictly the owners on this.
Talk a little bit about working in after your playing days were over. You talked about working for the Browns, working for the Indians, and then you said you worked for Kraft for a while.
I was with Kraft Foods. I went with Kraft Foods after I quit baseball. I worked with them as a institutional salesman for 15 years. And then I retired from that.
Mm-hmm. And since then, no other?
I haven't worked since then, but we've been doing an awful lot of traveling, going to a lot of card shows and whatnot, and I play in the Detroit Tiger alumni games up in Toledo for muscular dystrophy or some cause.
Mm-hmm.
We go around and play softball games, and I'm active in that yet.
Mm-hmm. Two more questions. Do you have a favorite memory, or do you have a biggest thrill, if you want to call it that, from your baseball career?
Well, my biggest thrill would probably be that pitching that first game against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. Of all places to be pitching your first start, being in Yankee Stadium and still coming out on top, that would be one that would always be in my memory, and also this midget situation, which is something that'll never go away.
I agree. That is a great story. Last question. Is there anything, if you had the chance, if you could go back and do one thing over or do something different, is there anything that comes to mind?
Yes, there is. I feel that in the off season, back then, that I could have conditioned myself a little better than what I did. Would have worked a little bit harder in that respect, because back then we were playing for the fun of the game in baseball. We weren't going to be millionaires in baseball. We knew it at the time. And if you could have fun in playing the game, it was great. And I felt that if I could go back now, I would have probably taken care of myself a little bit better, so I could have played the game longer.
Okay, Bob, thanks for spending some time with me today.
You're welcome, Rick.